Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. The Portland area prides itself on the extensive network of parks and natural areas surrounding us, but these amenities are something we cannot just take for granted. How do we ensure that all area residents have access to nature, and why is this so important? This morning we talk with Mike Wetter, founder and executive director of the Intertwined Alliance, and board member Philip Wu, about how the Alliance works with a broad coalition of public, private, and nonprofit organizations and leaders to guarantee that the health, equity, and environmental benefits of nature remain a significant component of the metropolitan region. Mike and Philip, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
And I have a feeling that a lot of our listeners probably haven't heard of what the Intertwined Alliance is. So let's start by just talking a little bit about what is the Alliance and how did it come into being?
Yeah, so the Intertwined Alliance, we really started working on this about 10 years ago when a group of civic leaders got together and recognized that all of the significant achievements that we'd accomplished in the region related to parks, trails, and natural areas, whether that be open a major new regional park or trail, make a major regional trail connection, all had one common denominator. They always had one thing in common, and that was they involved a coalition of public, private, and nonprofit organizations and leaders working towards a common vision. And so at one point we just said, well, rather than put this together every time we want to do something big, why not put it together and keep it together and just keep doing big things?
It's so, kind of like that gear bag that I have that I used to just, like, every time I went out to do a recording, I would throw everything together in the bag. And then I realized at some point, why don't I just buy a single bag and put everything in it? So is that kind of what this is?
You know, I've never heard it described quite that way, but yes, that's right.
Now, I remember you had a very interesting name before somebody came up with the Intertwined Alliance. Can you remember what that name was?
I do. It was called Connecting Green. And the story there was that we took that idea. I went to Travel Portland and said, you know, we've got this great idea for a project called Connecting Green, and we really want to connect people who live here with the place, with the parks, trails, and natural areas in the region. And we're calling this Connecting Green, and we'd like to create some, do some public relations around it and Travel Portland. And I said, would you help us? And Travel Portland folks at the time said, well, yes, we'll help you, but not if it's called Connecting Green.
So what does the Intertwine mean?
So the Intertwine is a, what it stands for is an interconnected network of parks, trails, and natural areas, and really just says that nature doesn't stop at geographical boundaries. You know, birds and fish and nature doesn't recognize county lines, city lines. It is interconnected through the region, and people don't either. They're interested in accessing a trail network that connects the region that they get the sense that they're able to travel without concern that a trail is going to end at a city line. So really the idea was around, you know, the Intertwine is to stand for that interconnected network.
Well, I was thinking how when I first came to Portland, I lived in the city, and my sense of Portland was actually probably southeast Portland, a little bit of northeast, northwest, and downtown. And then I moved out towards Mount Hood for a few years, and then I had a much more holistic impression of Portland, and I realized Portland had this connection. First of all, I started spending time in other areas of Portland besides where I lived, and I also started understanding its relationship to the surrounding countryside and saw it as a piece of this much larger kind of ecosystem. And I wonder if this is kind of the idea of getting people who live in Portland to connect to what's just outside of Portland, as well as getting people who live outside to connect what's happening into the city as well.
Yes, that's right. I think, you know, we have one board member that says, we will have succeeded when a squirrel on a limb at 3rd and Pine downtown can travel westbound and reach the coast without touching the ground. So it's, you know, it's a aspiration to connect really the region together, but then beyond.
So it's also kind of, it sounds like a little bit like the idea of wildlife corridors, but maybe some of that wildlife includes people with you know, two legs and who talk a lot.
That's right.
So Philip, what is your connection to the Intertwined Alliance? Because we haven't really mentioned that Mike Wetter, who we just heard from, you actually are the co-founder and now the executive director, or have been the executive director of the Intertwined Alliance for...
Yes, I'm the founding executive director, and I think there are a number of people who would claim that they're the founder, but it's a shared honor.
So, Philip, how did you get involved?
Well, I'm one of the
probably one of the first board members of the Intertwine Alliance, and my connection with the Intertwine stems from my professional association with Kaiser Permanente. And so at that time, many, many years, in fact, I've lost count of when this all began, Kaiser was interested in the Intertwine because of this connection to green space, you know, outdoors, trails, primarily from the issue of health. And so, you know, we were interested in making sure that the community had every capability to develop all of these resources so that people could, in fact, be outside, improve their health, be physically active. And so my connection to the Intertwine Alliance was sort of working for that and towards that from the perspective of health.
Well, I think today we're going to talk about two of the many aspects of the Intertwine Alliance that are reasons for its being. And one is health, and the other one has to do with the equity of access to nature. Mm-hmm. And that actually even brings up a thorny question. I was thinking about this on the way in about how a lot of the, or some of the areas that you work so hard to protect as natural areas have become homeless encampments. Definitely mm-hmm. like the Springwater Corridor Trail is one. So that brings up a whole other area about equity. But let's start by the reasons why it's so important that not only that Portland has this whole network of natural areas, but that it be protected and be preserved. Either one of you can take that one. Mike.
Okay, sorry.
Well, I think one of the things that we recognize in working in a metropolitan region is that nature has multiple benefits in a metropolitan area. Traditionally, a lot of conservation work was done outside of metropolitan regions because the nature is more pristine there. It's more fragmented in metropolitan areas. So in many ways, people thought, well, people live in cities, and nature is somewhere out there in the more rural or more pristine parts of the world. As we start approaching the Intertwine Alliance, we realize that the multiple benefits that nature it achieves in metropolitan regions, and it's quite different than outside of metropolitan areas. It includes health, equity, economic development, transportation, education. There's just a whole range of different things. And, of course, then also the environment and ecosystem services, which is a fancy term for all the benefits that nature provides around filtering our water and managing our stormwater and such. So there's what we're finding is that if you think across silos, the total value derived from investments in nature actually is quite significant. The challenge, of course, is that we make these investments from the point of view of silos. So one agency will be looking for a benefit in terms of cleaner water, another agency will be interested in education, yet another organization might be working on transportation or the environment. And so what we've got to do is start to think across silos and recognize that nature, investments in nature create multiple benefits for people as well as for the creatures that are out there.
Yeah. You know, and I think the other piece about this from the standpoint of health is that, you know, our concept of what health is has been maturing and evolving over the past several years. So now, you know, we don't think of health as just the absence of disease. You know, we think of it actually in very positive terms, so that health is both a physical, but it's also an emotional and spiritual connection. And, you know, some people have heard about this term that we call or that we use, which is called the social determinants of health, which means your health as an individual and as a community depends on a whole bunch of factors in addition to just your physical well-being. So, for example, you know, if you have a job, if you have education, you know, the social context of your community, all of those things make up health. And so, you know, I think what we're learning about nature is that nature has so many impacts on both us as human beings, but also benefits for our community from those emotional, spiritual, social connections, that all of these factors are important when we think about what health really is. So that's why the Intertwine has, you know, sort of this major focus or theme of the health-nature connection. Now, you know, in this past election cycle, you know, we had this measure for outdoor schools.
You're going to bring up the one of the few positive things that happened in this
last
one
election. But you know, but I think that whole campaign around outdoor school was another way of thinking about just how significant the outdoors and nature can be. Now, of course, that particular measure was framed around, you know, kids having access through outdoor school. But the basic concept is nature has a very powerful benefit for everyone.
I want to get back to Mike's thing about silos, which has kind of a militaristic sense to me. But we could also think about silos for storing grain, I guess, as well. But when I'm thinking about the cross relationship between all these different, basically the different perspectives that are looking at nature, there's also these different agencies that have to do, the city and county agencies that have to do with actually doling out the money that protects the nature in the city. And one of those, or two of those agencies in particular, started coming under a huge fire a few years ago from certain business interests, and that's the Water Bureau, and in particular the Bureau of Environmental Services, that have been instrumental in not just providing water from the Bull Run Reserve and getting our wastewater, well, through the big pipe and now into the Columbia River cleaned up, but that it also looks at all the other issues that you were talking about, all these other resources that we have, that both clean water, that will help with all kinds of other aspects of that kind of infrastructure. A big place that was of concern, two areas, because they're kind of in my neighborhood. One was Oaks Bottom, protecting that, and the other one was the hillside above McAdam going up to the cemetery, which Bureau of Environmental Services made a big deal about buying a few years ago. And then these business interests are saying, why are you doing that? You're supposed to be building pipes. Why are you protecting natural areas? And I'm not sure what happened with the hillside, but I know in Oaks Bottom that all the incredible caring that Bureau of Environmental Services have been nurturing and the rebuilding trails and really cleaning out the invasive species, it's all gone by the wayside, and the place is just like a weedy mess in a lot of ways, and it's being cleaned up more by neighbors than it is by the city. So how do we get back to that kind of view, that this kind of holistic approach where it's not just the function of Bureau of Environmental Services, for instance, isn't just to build pipes to get our sewage out, but it's also to preserve natural areas, wetlands, to protect the health of the landscape around us, and also feed into the intertwine that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, that the Bureau of Environmental Services got caught sort of working outside their silo, which is, or at least that's what they were accused of. And that's exactly what they should be doing. They should be thinking about the greater benefits. And that's why we have 160-plus organizations in the Intertwine Alliance, because we need actually all of them contributing in the ways that they can contribute to create benefits, in these multiple benefits.
Now, are you finding that with the Intertwine, they're able to give, like, sort of back up BES to do the right thing as opposed to cave into the business interests, which you're trying to minimize what they can do?
Yeah, we're doing our best to do exactly that. And a lot of it is in the leadership, too, you know, the elected leadership supporting them and understanding the value of their setting the tone that they want to see agencies thinking about the broader public good rather than just thinking in silos. And we waste a lot of money when we get into that sort of siloed thinking. It is just not as efficient in achieving overall good as it is when we can think and sort of work together across agency boundaries. And one of the reasons we bring different organizations together is that, you know, maybe a water utility is required by statute to think primarily about the quality of water, but a parks agency can think about recreation, and a school can think about education, and a transportation agency can think about transportation. And we bring those organizations together to co-invest. Then we can show that each is doing their job, and yet we're still achieving those broader benefits. I wanted to piggyback on one thing that Phil said earlier about the benefits of nature on health. It's commonly understood now that eating right is good for your health. Also commonly understood that being physically active is good for your health. What is not widely understood is being in nature just in and of itself is good for your health. A lot of people think that being in nature, they sort of associate that with being physically active, which is often true. But actually just nature itself, the effect on the human body has a positive effect. And we're finding more and more surprises around that, more and more discoveries that are surprising, such as women who live in neighborhoods with trees have higher birth weight babies. And that's been confirmed by numerous studies around the world conducted using different methodologies and very rigorously controlled and academically validated. So it's, but we don't know exactly why. And so those kinds of things are proving really interesting to us, that we can achieve health outcomes just purely through exposure to nature.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about the Intertwined Alliance, which is a group of many government and non-government agencies and individuals who are working to integrate and protect our very rich network of natural areas in and outside of the Portland area. And my guests are Philip Wu, who is a board member and I guess retired from Kaiser Permanente.
Retired pediatrician from Kaiser Permanente.
Okay, to be more specific. And then Mike Wetter, who is one of the many, many, many founders of the Intertwined Alliance and is now the executive director. I'm just thinking about this kind of intangible, kind of hard to quantify, but maybe getting better quantified now, impact that nature has on our health. Right after the election, I think until I went down for my daily walk in Oaks Bottom, I was like barely able to function. And I got down there and I was with a neighbor and we were walking and giving each other a lot of emotional support. But there was also just this nurturing that was very amazing. And then a few days later, I surprised myself and went for a walk in Forest Park. Right. And that actually did even more, because it was the first time I felt like my body just kind of settled down. Right. So there is this thing that nature does to us, which I guess scientists can spend a lot of time trying to quantify. And I was very interested when I heard from another guest a few weeks ago about the birth weight study and trees in the Portland area. Yeah. But there's this something, this feeling that I think a lot of us have known about. So I want to talk a little bit about what that feels like, why it's so important that we get people into nature, and how the Intertwined Alliance can help get people in there.
Well, first of all, you know, going back to the issue of studies, you know, there are increasing number of studies that actually show how it is that when people are out in nature, their brain changes how it functions. And so there are studies now, for example, down in Stanford. Last year, they did a study that showed how your frontal lobe functions differently when you are in nature compared to when you are in a stressful urban kind of environment. So that evidence is building. You know, so I think that's one of the basic foundational facts, that I think if we can take that evidence and say, this is how it applies in many, many different kinds of situations, just like you were saying, you know, after post-election, everyone is stressed out, everyone is, you know, feeling despondent, depressed.
Oh, not everyone, actually, but people who think like,
well, at least, yes, exactly. Well,
most people in Portland, at
yes,
any rate.
Yes, we say that collectively, but you go out into nature, and it almost automatically has an effect on your mental and emotional well-being. You know, and so I think that's the kind of thing that we all have anecdotes, and I think it's now being the intention is to be very deliberate, not just accidental, you know, but being very deliberate about using that connection to basically have positive impacts on our health.
Well, it kind of gets me to that issue of equity, which is one of the things when Mike Houck, I have to give him some credit, it was his idea to do the show today, and he's here in absentia because we didn't really have enough room for three people to comfortably have the conversation. But we've talked a lot, Mike and I have talked a lot about the whole idea of equity and access to nature. And I'm thinking, I have a lot of privilege. I mean, I live near Oaks Bottom, so I go walking there every day. I have the ability to easily get to Northwest Portland, so I can go hiking in Forest Park. And I have the ability to get out to the woods, what we used to call the real woods, though I think Forest Park does a pretty good job. So not everybody in Portland has that access. In fact, a lot of people don't have that access, not just in Portland, but around the world. How is the Intertwined Alliance working to provide, well, two things. One, the awareness that, yes, you need to do this and it's good for you and you can do it, and then provide the means to people, everybody, no matter what their economic or geographic access is, that they have access to the same kinds of wonderful places that I have access to.
Well, I mean, I think there are two elements of that. First of all, it's one thing to say we want everyone to be able to go to nature as if nature is something that's away or out there. And it's another concept to say we want to bring nature in. So wherever you live, you want to basically infuse nature into your environment, whatever that environment happens to be. So it's kind of a two-way street. So the issue of equity can cut both ways as well. Yes, we want communities and populations to have the same kind of access to nature. If we define access to nature as being you're going somewhere else, well, that's one thing. But we also want to say, let's look at all of our neighborhoods and communities and how do we infuse nature into those communities wherever they are, and then have basically a similar benefit. Because our definition of nature is basically everything that is essentially not human built.
I think that's interesting, because I think that there's, depending on what neighborhood you're in Portland, you either are in this really nature abundant, tree lined, park access neighborhood where nature is an everyday part of your life, and I think really probably changes your mindset in a lot of ways. But there's a lot of parts of Portland, maybe not as much as there are in San Francisco, but still a lot of parts of Portland where you don't have that access. So what needs to change so that people who live in parts of the like St. John's and North Portland, where it's not only they don't have a lot of trees and a lot of greenery, they have a huge amount of pollution that people like in my neighborhood don't have to deal with.
Right.
Yeah, I was I was going to say that when we talk about multiple benefits of nature, that communities of color and disadvantaged groups miss out on all of those benefits. It's not just access to nature for health reasons. It's access to nature for and the benefits of nature across the board. And one that I'll bring up that's of particular interest right now in the Portland area is the fact that even though people of color make up 36% of the population in the U.S., they make up only 16% of the people working in environmental organizations, both government and nonprofit. And that's the results of a study that was done in 2014 by a group, and you can find it on the web if you Google on the Green 2.0. But the title, the Green Insiders Club, is sort of the outcome they found is that over many, many years, environmental organizations have been saying that's one of their values is to diversify their workforce, to provide benefits of their programs across the board equally to all people. And yet what the study found is that actually is not happening in actual fact, that actually we've got kind of, there's they call it the green ceiling. There's a 16% kind of that's the percentage of people of color that have been able to get jobs in the green sector, and it hasn't risen above that in many, many years. And so it's a really good question about how do we, because if we're going to actually begin to deliver benefits fully to all of the people that live in our region, then we need to also be employing those people.
Right.
So and in some ways it's a self-perpetuating cycle where if you don't benefit from nature as much, you're not as interested in those jobs, and then you don't get those jobs, and then the people that are running those agencies are creating programs that benefit people like them. They tend to, and so it the cycle continues. So I think that's one of the things that we're really looking at is how do we change our organizations and really understand the implicit biases in all of our organizations so that we can change those statistics.
So how do you do it? Besides saying that you need to do it.
Well, I think to really sort of get down to the nuts and bolts, the right people need to be in the place where decisions are made. And so, for example, if we're talking about communities of color, and if they are missing out on most of these benefits or many of these or all of these benefits, then they have to have a seat at the table to be able to share in the policy-making decisions that then affect their communities and neighborhoods. So I think that's kind of the basic starting point that Mike has just referred to. I mean, it's a constantly evolving cycle that's institutionalized, but the only way to break that cycle is to bring people in at the seat of decision-making who can then start the cycle of essentially changing that cycle.
Actually, right after the election, I was at this event that 350.org sponsored, and it centered around watching this webinar that the National 350 organization had. Well, they were running it live earlier that day. Featured Bill McKibben, of course, and Annie the director of Greenpeace, Annie Leonard. And then everybody else was a person of color and was also, I think, under 30. It was an interesting webinar. Now, everybody in the room here in Portland, I think everybody was white, maybe a handful weren't. And a lot of them were probably over 45 or 50. Mm. So there was this interesting disconnect between what 350.org nationally was obviously trying to at least portray on the webinar and who they were reaching in Portland. So I wonder how... I appreciated that 350 was doing this. I really appreciate that Bill McKibben, in his opening statement, said that we need to, right now, the biggest priority is, as much as I'm frightened about the climate, the biggest priority is protecting immigrants and undocumented immigrants in particular. So there's a real focus looking at cross-cultural, mm-hmm. looking at cross-ethnic and class mm-hmm. and cross-class lines. It's coming from him. I'm not sure how that connects to Portland, which still has its own insularity.
You know, I think to solve this problem takes very intentional action, and it's hard work. It really forces you to get at the root of the implicit bias that each of us carries personally and that is built into our organizations, and that's not easy to do. So we have a very close partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we're involved with bringing some money to town. There's $1 million a year coming here to work with public engagement and health and nature and some things, youth engagement. And one of the things we're doing is with some of that money is working with a broad array. I think there's 40 organizations all together in our coalition that we're working together to do organizational assessment work, do training, and to get some consulting and support to actually change the organizations, to change the way we do business, to change the makeup of the organizations themselves, to change the leadership of the organizations. And you know, organizations are the gatekeepers for resources. So to really get to a more equitable distribution of resources, you have to change organizations. And so that work, which we're deeply involved in, we've been doing it in the Intertwined Alliance for a number of years now and are working with our partner organizations. We're not experts, we're participants just like they are, but we're bringing people in who really understand this territory and can guide and support. And so we're just doing the hard work and it does start at home. It does start with focusing on your own organization and the work that you need to do, looking at program impact, looking at human resources, looking at procurement, looking at leadership, all of those things.
I mean, I can think of a number of organizations, particularly in North and Northeast Portland, that I would consider environmental justice organizations, mm-hmm. led by people of color. A lot of them mm-hmm. have been led by women, actually, which is another interesting factor. Mm-hmm. And their constituents are largely communities of color. Mm-hmm. So even here in our mostly white Portland community, there are these strong groups, but I didn't see them at the Intertwine. I mean, I haven't been to the Intertwine Alliance's events in a number of years, as we talked about before we came on the air, but I don't see them as clearly represented, I guess. And so I'm wondering, how do you reach out to those communities?
It's all a relationship building exercise. And, right. and I think if you think about, if you're forming a coalition, and who is it that joins the coalition first? It's all of those groups and people that have been working together for years and years and years. And so the people who have been excluded or not felt welcome or for whatever reason have not been involved are not at the table right away. That work takes time to build those relationships. And so when we, early in the development of the Intertwined Alliance, looked around the room and realized people looked a lot alike, and we started intentionally reversing that and working to build those bridges. And I think we've made quite a lot of progress on it.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about the Intertwine Alliance, which is a vast network. It's kind of like, almost like a web of agencies, organizations, individuals who are working to protect and enhance this vast network and web of natural areas we have around the city. Well, in talking about equity, one of the things that concerns me about open space and how we protect it in Portland is that we've been seeing there's almost an equation that's happening in Portland in the last couple of years between natural areas and homeless camps, and they're becoming magnets for homeless camps, and it upsets particularly the communities that live in the neighborhoods, like for instance around the Springwater Corridor, which had mm-hmm. one of the largest camps probably ever in Portland, or at least since the 1930 Hoovervilles. Mm-hmm. And so these are people who are really so marginalized from mm-hmm. our communities that they don't have houses to live in. and we don't want them in our natural areas. So how do we, this to me like really gets at the crux of the issues of equity and how much these people are just pushed out of even the conversation about equity.
Yeah, I was talking about earlier about the multiple right. benefits of nature, and one of the benefits should not be housing. I think we should not be housing. And I don't have any really good solutions. I think, you know, we've got to find a way to provide people with housing. And the from a trail point of view, because many people are turning up in this, you know, are living in the Springwater Corridor and other regional trails. From that point of view, it's a kind of a cycle of on one hand, the more people using a trail, the less likely there is going to be problems on a trail. And at the same time, the minute you start to have crime or people start to feel uncomfortable, fewer people use the trail, and then it can go the other direction. We get more and more activity out there that is not the kind of activity that we're hoping to support. So I think that as the trail network gets connected, as it becomes more and more well used, we'll see people feeling safer out there, and that success breeds success, and we'll get more and more people using the trails and for what they're intended to be used for, and the natural areas for what they're intended to do, rather than have to serve as homes for people that don't have homes.
I mean, the other part of it, and this is not a conversation, I mean, this should not be on your heads, but I mean, people need homes. We need housing in the city. We need affordable housing, which actually is going to get to the next question I got from a caller. So I see this as, unfortunately, I think that the natural areas in the city take the brunt of the whole crisis we have around housing. But I do have a strong feeling myself that, natural areas are not for housing. And it's but it's a very hard argument to make with people who don't have any place else to live.
Right.
Well, we got a caller who wants to know if there's other methods that organizations like the Intertwine Alliance are using to change city policies, whether it's the code charter. It says code charter, I'm not sure what that means. But to change the policies, I guess, around one thing I have a feeling, this has been a discussion a lot on the show, has to do with the ways that infill, the pressure to do infill, is eradicating nature. And we did a conversation a couple of weeks ago about the whole idea of the importance of trees, and that low-income neighborhoods and affordable housing shouldn't just do away with trees in order to squeeze in more housing units.
Right.
Is there a way that the Intertwine Alliance is having any input and discussions with those in the city that develop policy?
I think that, you know, the Intertwine Alliance, you have to remember, is really it's a coalition of 160 organizations, and so we're working across a whole range of different fronts. We mainly support our partners' work, and so one of the things that we're doing is we're looking at we got a project called Greening of Schoolyards, which is supported by Family Care and some other organizations in the region, and the concept there is that right now, many schoolyards are pretty barren places. And we know, getting back to the multiple benefits of nature, that nature improves children's academic performance, and it improves their health. It adds a whole educational dimension to their curriculum. And so we're looking at how do we create gardens and green spaces within schoolyards. There's also a program called Backyard Habitat Program that many people have probably heard of, where, you know, you can take your backyard and turn that into habitat. So we're looking at, because we recognize that, again, in cities, nature is more fragmented than it is in the pristine areas, and yet that gives us opportunities to look in places that we wouldn't have ordinarily thought to create natural habitat and natural experiences.
Now, is the Intertwine Alliance having any input at all, like in the whole issue around density and infill, and the idea that as we are infilling areas in the city that are viewed as being not dense enough, that nature is as big a factor, including leaving trees, particularly legacy trees, in these places where development's going in?
Well, let me back up just a step there and say that, you know, the Intertwine itself, and the Intertwine Alliance itself, as Mike has said, is a partnership of, you know, 150-plus organizations. So it's not that the Intertwine itself is doing something for something. It's convening and bringing partners together and then mobilizing the effort to get things done. So, for example, and I think in the area that you're talking about, in our Health in Nature initiative, we have had several forums that we have put together over the past, probably the past year or two. And we bring multiple partners together, public jurisdictions, nonprofits, business, and we talk about all of the elements about what nature would look like in various kinds of settings. So like in cities, in neighborhoods, in areas that essentially have had nothing, and say, okay, what are the challenges in bringing nature into these different environments? Not that the Intertwined Alliance can do it, but we raise the subject and we try to educate and then motivate partners to then, in their regular work, then take on this framework and then try to make improvements.
Well, I had this interesting experience yesterday. I went out to Bethany, which I had not been to since it was farmland, and was having breakfast with some new friends. And as we're going out on Bethany Boulevard, cross over, I think it's called the Rock Creek Greenway, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Bike path, walking path. It probably was maybe 100 feet wide, maybe 200 feet wide. Not very wide, in the midst of all this suburbia that's brand new. And then I thought, this is very nice. It's kind of a little, I'm glad they saved this little strip. I wish it was wider. And I'm not sure if the Intertwined Alliance had much to do with creating that greenway. But and then we continued on. We got to where we were going for the meal. And it was this, I mean, it was just construction everywhere. And it was really amazing. This is like people in Portland complain about infill. I mean, this was like infilling nature, basically, because this is all green. This is all greenfield development as opposed to what we do here in Portland. And the house we went to was on the street, and it was basically a brand new development, probably only been built about a year ago. And at the end of the block was all this woods. And I looked around and I realized that all the rest of this was woods probably with a year and a half ago. So there's a question I had about in developing enough housing for the seemingly burgeoning population of the Portland metro area. And we're so concerned about protecting and putting in street trees and all this stuff. And there are no street trees in any of these streets. But we're also just plowing over like all our knocking down all this forest land. So how do we manage, how do we balance that kind of contradiction? Because I think keeping a greenway like the Rock Creek Greenway doesn't really solve the problem.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I think, you know, we know that there are more people coming to the region. The region's growing in population. And so really continuing to be vigilant about weaving nature into the established neighborhoods and valuing nature as we're planning new communities is just going to be an ongoing discipline and an ongoing battle, I think. And, you know, I don't have any easy answers to that one.
And you're not in the position to make those decisions.
Right.
Well, Phil, particularly I think in terms of health, because I feel like we're taking some really beautiful areas. I mean, when these people moved there a year ago, across the road from them was all woods. And they moved there thinking they were moving it to the edge of the woods. And that woods is receding. So how do we find a way to hang on to the woods that we are so quickly eradicating?
Well, you know, from a health perspective, you know, I think you could say that if you have intelligent, thoughtful land use and planning, you probably can have both. In other words, you can create those areas of development and yet still maintain access to nature and infuse nature into those neighborhoods and at least have the health benefits. All right, which is, I guess, in a way, sort of a different lens that you can look through from the issue of how are we preserving all of those woods that we want to continue to have, which is a slightly different issue. You know, so the issue of conservation overlaps with the issue of how do we maintain and promote our health. You know, they have many shared agendas, but there are areas where they are slightly different. And so in the area of land use and planning, that gets to be very complicated.
You know, one thing our community's done that I think we should feel really proud of is that we have passed a couple of bond measures, actually several in the region, two metro bond measures to acquire natural area land,
right.
One in the Tualatin Hills Parks and Recreation District, one in the city of Tigard. And that money has, which the voters have, through strong majorities, have voted to support, to buy natural area land and protect it from development has made an enormous difference in the region. You can see some just tremendous places now throughout the region, Mount Talbot and Cooper Mountain and others that are now protected in perpetuity for some limited access and for nature. And so, and then at this, just in this last election, the voters voted to support Metro in continuing to fund the restoration and protection of that land and management of that land. So the voters in the Portland region have been very supportive of when we put measures on the ballot to protect and acquire and restore natural area land, we've supported that.
And something else that I think is very important, which is I think much of what we're talking about rests with values. You know, if we value access to nature, preservation, conservation, and the infusion of nature into our living areas, then that is a value. And to go back to the issue of the election, you know, supporting outdoor school is a way of educating our young upcoming generations about how to preserve, how to care for, how to know about nature. And I think that's kind of an important starting point, because if you don't have a generation that cares about it and knows about it, you're not going to have thoughtful decisions later on.
And probably if it had a generation that had gone to outdoor school, Trump would not have been elected president.
Well,
I think that there's a certain value. I really do. We are out of time. I've really been enjoying this conversation, and I, Philip, I appreciate kind of bringing it back to a very positive note at the end, because I think we need a little infusion of hope every day now. So I want to thank you very much for joining us. We've been talking this morning with Mike Wetter, who's founder and executive director of the Intertwine Alliance and Alliance board member and retired pediatrician from Kaiser Permanente, Philip Wu. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we'll talk with climate change activist and teacher Jan Zuckerman and one of her former students, Ella Schreiner, about the phenomenal youth movement that's come together to take on climate change. My engineer is Terrell Laurie. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go up with some music by the Grateful Dead. Thanks for listening, and have a good solstice.
If my words did glow with the gold of sunshine, and my tunes were played on the harp.